On today's segment of Navigating Inflation, our team is pleased to introduce Leo Dirkman, Managing Director of Oppenheimer Investment Management. Oppenheimer Investment Management is a disciplined advisor that manages fixed income portfolios for individuals and institutional clients. Teams of experienced professionals share a common philosophy that emphasizes a disciplined investment process, combined with a long-term perspective focused on managing risk. Please enjoy our brief discussion with Leo as he discusses inflation and how it affects their portfolio as a whole.
Consumer prices are continue to accelerate in October, rising at the fastest pace for any month in more than a decade, and pushing the 12-month increase to 6.2%. I mean, think about that. 6.2%. That's the largest increase, the largest since 1990. Inflation is clearly a problem, and the Federal Reserve's claim that it is transitory looks more and more ridiculous each month. Well, I completely disagree with that. And I don't think it looks any more ridiculous. And I don't think inflation is going to be a long-term problem. We firmly believe that it is transitory in nature. That same 6.2% on a 12-month basis, on a 24-month basis, it's 3.1%. On a 24-month basis. Think about what we've gone through in the past 24 months and think about how we measure inflation and the periods of time that we start talking about. If I'm in the newspaper business, I'm going to definitely print that 6.2%. I'm definitely not going to print the real change in the 24-month CPI, which is 3.1%. Because that doesn't get to sell as many newspapers and it doesn't catch my readers' eyes like that, you know. But that's the harsh reality. Let's not all forget that during 2020, we had, you know, a lot of different situations, a lot of things developing, a lot of changes in the marketplaces, and COVID continues to remain a driving force behind the rise in inflation that we've seen. And one of the simple reasons is that it was so damn low. The prior, we're looking at a 24-month period of 3.1%. Now, some of that will stick around. Some of it is honestly transitory, but let's remember the Fed has been trying to get a 2% or higher inflation rate for, let's see, 10 years, maybe longer than that. And they haven't been successful in doing it. And why do they want that? Why do they want some kind of a above 2% inflation rate? Because if they have an inflation rate that is not at least 2%, it gets awfully close to disinflation. And a bank, a Federal Reserve, the Fed, to try to combat disinflation is extremely difficult. This is an opportune time to finally get our economy at or at least above a 2% for a possibly a 3 to 5 year period of time for inflation to get to that average. We're trying to get to that average. Now, why does the Fed want to get to that average, over that average? Again, number one, because it prevents just the opposite in something they cannot control and something they don't necessarily have the tools to control, is when prices start going down below and it's really hard to reinflate. Second reason is their mandate, and their mandate is full employment. And they kind of broadened their mandate. If we remember what our good friend, Mr. Powell, talked about early this year in 2020, they're really focused on trying to get those lower echelons. You don't see wage inflation in the lower brackets of the economy and the lowest wages until you get a squeeze on employment. You got to have an employment squeeze. You got to have some competition. You got to be able to give those people some power to negotiate higher wages at those lower levels. And we're talking service jobs. We're talking people that were making $10 an hour. Now we're making, you know, you hear about the $15 per hour. You hear about down to going to $16 an hour. Well, most of those jobs, let's remind ourselves, require transportation to get to. and most of the people in the lowest tiers of our economy and in our society have no mode of transportation. They're relying upon public services and public buses and so forth and so on. Those jobs are still not paying. Those kind of people are still not earning the Amazon wages. You know, they're earning $12, they're earning $10. And yeah, you're going to hear about in New York City where they can't get enough people, or even in St. Louis, or even in Indianapolis and Carmel, Indiana, where they can't get enough people. But it's predominantly because the people have not made enough money to be able to afford a vehicle or a modus of transportation. They can't get to the job. So it's not a new problem. It's a problem that we've had for many, many years. But now we're getting a little bit more press about it. So the Fed wants to get these lower rungs of our employment, of our employees, the opportunity to make some money. And the only way they can do that is to continue to support the economy, continue to have, you know, this transitory inflation exist. Nobody has any control over the current kind of inflation, transitory inflation that we have. First and foremost, that's another important thing. The Fed, nobody has any control. We can't do anything about the fact that there's a bunch of ships out there in the Atlantic or in the Pacific Ocean, or the Atlantic for that matter, I suppose, that are full of goods and merchandise that can't get unloaded because, you know, of COVID-D was the most recent thing. That's kind of gone away now. We'll start to see these bottlenecks go away as well. We're already starting to see some of the bottlenecks go away in the chips. You're not going to hear about that, but it certainly is anecdotal. We have these analysts, we call them analysts here. We have four full-time analysts, and they do a wonderful job for us. And they're very intellectual, far smarter than what I am, thank God. And they have done a tremendous job of finding and listening to calls and trying to understand what's going on with the various bottlenecks. And I can tell you, in our morning meeting, which we have every day at 8:30, we hear from them. And, you know, the companies, they're reporting, the companies are starting to see some, you know, loosening up and some better flow of things. And the bottlenecks are slowly dissipating. So, yeah, we do believe it's transitory in nature. We think it's a healthy thing right now because we think ultimately, as we move out of COVID, which we will never fully move out of COVID, our economy is going to start going back to what it used to be, which is more of a service-driven economy and less goods-driven. And by the end of 2022, we'll probably be talking about disinflation and people have too much physical inventory. They ordered too much. They were worried that they weren't going to have any be able to get access. There's going to be so much product and stuff because people will have less money to spend on the consumption of goods. And they'll be spending more money on services, going out to dinner and movies and all that stuff that they like to spend their money on. So those are our thoughts, initial thoughts on the topic of inflation. We do think that we're headed towards a longer term, probably starting, I don't know, maybe in 23, a 2% world. We're hoping that the 10-year treasury can get to 2%. We're hoping that the GDP is at least 2%. And we're hoping inflation is around 2%. That's the 2% world. And it sounds awfully familiar if you remember the past 10 years where we had the long expansion and everybody was scratching their heads like, wow, this is an expansion. It's awfully boring. But, you know, we're used to 4% type of GDP growth. And to be able to get a 4% GDP growth in this environment that we now live in and with our changing demographics and so forth, let's keep it. We're going to start to target for a 2%, 2%, and 2%. And the Fed's going to have to work really hard to keep the inflation rate above 2%. So near term, yes, we have inflation. Longer term, likely not. Very likely not. And if anything, the Fed will be working hard to prevent just the opposite of that, where we're paid to keep our money in the bank because the next day we can buy more goods or services with it as a result of deflation. So that's the party line, and happy to answer any questions that you guys have.
No, so, that's helpful. Go ahead. I was going to ask David, why don't you take the immediate follow up?
Yeah. So, you know, what's so interesting about this discussion is how divergent the views are. And so it's really interesting. Like a lot of challenging economic questions, it's amazing how people look at the same, what seems to be relatively, you know, the exact same data and come to different conclusions, which is fine because we don't really think it's our job to try to answer this, to try to divine what inflation is at the 12 months from now or 24 months from now. So I think it's more, you know, what are the possible outcomes, number one, and two is, and the question I have for you is, how do you frame what you're doing in the context of you or anyone else missing the mark? Like, is there anything that concerns you that if your view, which is obviously strongly held, is off by a little bit or a lot, what do you worry about? Or what should we worry about?
Well, first of all, if we were worried about something, we make a change because we got to sleep at night, right? We're long-term investors, been doing this for 25 years. And still, it's gray here, but we still have it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So the reason why we still have it is, sorry, nothing personal, but I'm just saying the reason is because we make changes if we're worried about something. So the way we manage this risk of potential inflation, rampant inflation, is management of duration. And the duration of, you know, we're somewhere between 4 and 5 years, excuse me, of duration. And in the longer, more credit sensitive, we concern ourselves less about duration and we concern ourselves more about credit risk. So in high yield, we really do not focus that much on duration because the story there is credit risk. We want to be able to manage credit risk. And then on the opposite side of that is cash management, which has a duration of 1.2 to 1.5 years. Obviously, that's very short and has very limited. I would never say none, but I would say very limited credit risk. It's all triple B or better credit in that portfolio, all investment grade, obviously. And we are very confident that all those companies will have the ability to pay off their maturities as they occur. So that's the one scale. So in between, you know, is that core plus product. The core plus product, and yes, I am talking my book because we're asking how we manage money, and we manage money based upon what we feel is the best way to address these kinds of concerns at any one given time. And the best long-term, based on the efficient frontier, is core plus or corporate core plus. But let's focus on core plus. Core plus has 80% investment grade, 20% high yield. And during a rising rate environment, and that's how we're positioned, we are positioned for a rising interest rate because the downside, if we are not positioned that way, is far exceeds the upside if it doesn't work out. Does that make sense?
Yes.
We're not getting adequately compensated to go long here. 30-year treasury is at 191. The 5-year treasury is at 121. 25 years, 70 basis points? Really? Not for us. We just bought 3-year treasury this morning, you know, 83 bips, something like that, just because, you know, in 3 years, we're going to have a clearer visibility. So how do we manage? We're being defensive in nature. We're not going long in duration. We're suggesting to people to have that nice combination of both investment grade and high yield, because that in the long term is a very defensive type of portfolio. Because if interest rates go up and look at the yield curve, the reality of it is the long 30-year has declined since the Fed started talking about potentially raising interest rates in 2022. The long has gone down about, I don't know, 30, 40 basis points. I think it was at, where was it? 164, I'm sorry. Yeah, the 30 years at 164, started the year at 164, and now it's at 190. But in the last month, the yield curve has started to flatten. So I'm looking at the 1 year versus the 1 month, Christian, that I sent to you. You know, you'll start to see that yield curve, you know, start to go down and level out. That's why we like our 3 year pivot point right now, because that's where it's the spread has popped the most. The yield has popped the most, rather, in that 3 year range over the past month. So we'll manage, if we're wrong or what concerns us, we manage that concern by managing duration and then focusing on that combination of both high yield and investment grade combination portfolios, core plus. Because rates start to rise, it's because the economy is improving. That pushes corporate spreads down. That helps invest high yield credits. Also, spreads to compress. That means we're making money for our clients. As a result of that, it offsets some of the rise in interest rates. The other thing is, with corporates, we have a high enough coupon that we can offset a lot, some of the rise, but just out earning our competitor indexes in the treasury curve because of spread.